This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Inside Art Scroll, where the books you read and the people who write them come to life. Today, I am privileged to be joined by Rabbi Daniel Gladstein. Thank you, Rabbi Daniel, for joining us.
Rabbi Yitzchak, good to see you.
We're here to discuss primarily your Haggadah, Rabbi Daniel Gladstein on the Haggadah, which came out last year, was one of the best-selling Haggadahs of the year. I could tell you the feedback that I got on this Haggadah was phenomenal.
Thank you.
People appreciate your style. They appreciate the questions you ask, the answers you give, the way you build up a sugya almost, on the issues that interest people as relates to the Haggadah. Talk for a moment about why you were propelled to write a Haggadah. What was the mindset when you wrote it?
Tell you, look, there are certainly no shortage of Haggadahs out there, certainly no shortage of art school Haggadahs.
Right.
But what's amazing in Torah is that the more you look at something, the more you see, still makom hiniach lano. There's always a niche. There's always a place. And studying, I wanted to study the Haggadah, not just to say, oh, a vertel here, a vertel there, a vertel. There's always a dvar Torah you could say on each shtickle. But to look at the Haggadah as one living document, to try to understand what's the introduction of the Haggadah, what's the main body of the Haggadah, what's the close of the Haggadah, what's the flow, why do certain Tanaim appear in the beginning and they sort of, you don't hear from them again, and other Tanaim, they come toward the end of the Seder, as if each Tana has a specific role in the Seder and a specific juncture. Is there significance to the number of words or the number of paragraphs? To look at the Haggadah as one entity and also as a living entity. What I mean by that is why certain concepts are mentioned where they are. Mm-hmm. And looking at the Haggadah in this vein, it opened up like a very vast vistas of understanding for me, and I was inspired to share it.
That's interesting that you mentioned that you approached it like that, because I was going to ask, when you decide, okay, I want to write a commentary on the Haggadah, okay, where do you start? I mean, you mentioned the Art Scroll Haggadahs. There are dozens of Art Scroll Haggadahs, from the classics, you know, printed decades ago, to more recent ones, and each one brings its own flavor from a different Gadol or from a collection of Gedolim and things of that sort. When you sat down, so to speak, proverbially, to write a Haggadah, do you just start at Kaddish and say, okay, what can I find out about that?
You know, people often ask, you know, what's the process?
Right.
And I feel that I wish I could pinpoint what the process is. The only analogy I have is, you know, Torah is, of course, it's a chachma, but I think that in terms of writing, it's an art. In other words, if you were to ask a painter, you know, how did you start with this painting? Which dot did you paint first? I don't know if a person would be able to identify it. So to speak, like, you have an inspiration and then...
You just go with it.
It flows, yeah. If I give you an example of what I mean, you know, the Haggadah basically... I'll give you a few examples, okay? The bookends of the Haggadah. The Haggadah begins, let's say, Halach Manya, Hashata Hacha, Lashana Haba, Ba'arad Yisrael. That's basically, in Aramaic, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. It ends with Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim. So, you know, to me, that's certainly of note. It can't be a coincidence that mm-hmm. it begins and ends the same way. You know, the Gemara in Saita says that if you want to, and there's a rule in life, anybody knows, if they want to get a good idea what a book is about, you know, you take the book, you open up to the beginning, you open up to the end, mm-hmm. and that gives you an idea what the book is about. The Gemara applies this to the Torah itself. The Gemara says, the Torah is kula gemilas chasadim. You know, it begins that Hashem clothed the Adam HaRishon. It ends that Hashem buries Moshe Rabbeinu. Begins with chesed, it ends with chesed. So the whole Torah is kulay chesed. So that would have to mean, if the Haggadah begins, you know, Lashon Haba B'Yerushalayim, and it ends that way, that must be what the Haggadah is about. That must be thematic to the entire body of material. And I'm wondering, but it's not at all. Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim has nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a story. We went down to Mitzrayim. They enslaved us, and Hashem freed us. But it's not about, you know, aspirations for Geula. But it must be that if these are the bookends, Chazal, and by the way, another, when I say Chazal, you know, it's amazing. There's so many Haggadahs. Who wrote the Haggadah? Who wrote it? I literally looked in dozens and dozens of Haggadahs.
We don't know.
So I really looked into this topic extensively, and this edition begins with a major essay, 10 approaches to who wrote the Haggadah. So that's an example of, there's so much information about the Haggadah, but there, you'll always find pockets of, you know, and opinions that range from Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, Moshe Rabbeinu, Rav Chaim Falaji says it was Rabbi Akiva, the Malbim Haggadah says it was Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, so it could be, and Rav Miller says the Jewish people wrote the Haggadah. It's a compilation.
Over the years, right.
Yeah.
Which would explain certain language discrepancies and things like that. But if I could say that, I think that that's what makes, from my vantage point as a reader, what makes this Haggadah so unique, maybe different than others, is that almost every topic that you address, when the reader reads it, they think, hey, you know, how come I never asked that question? Like, who wrote the Haggadah? And then you have that lengthy essay. Or you discuss, for example, how do we say Hallel at night? That's a very basic question. Hallel said by Yoyim, not by Laila. And you have a beautiful essay on that. But these are questions that people have that maybe they should have. They don't realize till they see it in your Haggadah. Hold on, this is a question I should have had. And then you address it so beautifully and you lay it out step by step by step. You incrementally and you almost build the reader's curiosity. That's your style in all your svarim.
Thank you.
You do the same in your beautiful sefer that you put out not long ago on Reb Meir Baal Nes. And your other svarim on the Mayadim and so on and so forth. You have, Baruch Hashem, this unique style that people connect to, and it manifests itself very prominently in this Haggadah, besides for the depth, the clarity, your yiddiyus, it's a breath of fresh air. So whoever, the people who didn't get to taste the beauty of Rabbi Gladstein on the Haggadah last year, Baruch Hashem, they should be able to do it this year at the Seder. But as a segue, I'm curious, growing up, Pesach, the Seder, what was it like in the Gladstein house? And who had the Ashpa on you to create the flavor of Zman Chiruseinu?
Well, you know, the Seder night is the go-to memory in everybody's mind. And whenever somebody thinks about the Haggadah, they always think back to how their Seder was growing up. One of the very powerful things I bring in the very beginning was my grandfather, who I've spoken about many times in this platform, Harav Mordechai Leib Gladstein, who was a survivor of the Holocaust. He passed away a few years ago, the night of the Seder.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, well, the first day of Pesach in the morning. So my father asked my grandfather, this was in the morning of Tesvav Nisan, said, you know, Tati, are you okay? Because he wasn't so responsive. And he said, I'm waiting for the Geula. And he had Mises Nashika.
Wow.
So in my grandfather, if you remember from the Purim book, my grandfather was named Mordechai because his bris was on Tainus Esther.
Right.
But he passed away on Pesach. So we say, you know, Mismach Geula LeGeula.
Right.
You know, his whole life, and this is a theme of the Sefer, his whole life, it was awaiting the Geula. He believed, when he was in Auschwitz, he believed Be'emunah Shleima, every single day Mashiach would come. And Mamish, his dying words, his last words were, he's awaiting the Geula. So when I say that the bookends are Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim, this reflects that, you know, it's very important to tell our children. They're going to say, we're reading the story, we read it last year, we read it the year before. Well, we're reading a story that happened 3,300 years ago. So I bring Rabbeinu Bechaye in at least 6 Mekoymos, in the Karakemach, Al HaTorah, he says, all the Nevi'im are Mesnavei in the same signoin, in the same fashion, that the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim were the prototype, the pre-enactment, the Masei Avisim Labanim, to the Gula HaSida. And all of these miracles will replay again before the coming of Mashiach. So whatever we're going to read about and learn the night of the Seder, it's not history, it's destiny. It's the future of the Jewish people. You know, the Nesivos has a diuk, Al achas kama kama, toiva kefula umechupeles, where every single miracle was layered. You know, why was it layered? Because it happened then, but that was like a dress rehearsal that it will happen again. So Lashana HaBab Yerushalayim are the perfect bookends of the Haggadah. They reflect the mamish, the toichen ha'inyan, the true nature of what we're trying to speak about the night of the Seder. It's important that, you know, a teenager, do they, like the buzzword is, do they connect with something that happened so long ago? It's important that they understand this is not about past. It's about future. It's about them. It's about what they're going to see. It's about what they need to hope for.
Right. I was going to ask you on, you're talking about the Seder being meaningful and people connecting to it. For many people, maybe it's not as inspiring as it should be, as much as there's a lot of nostalgia, like you said. It brings back memories of people's youth, but they're sitting out to say there, they feel like, hold on, we read these words before, we've done it before. What's your secret as a Rav and as a Mashpia and as a Mechaber of a Haggadah to infuse all of our Siddurim with the vitality, with the freshness? So that's not like saying over the same Vart that you heard 14 times on what Vehi stands for, you know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. I think this point is very ennobling for people. If we could realize, aside from the idea that we're supposed to imagine as if we were there in the past, I think it's worthwhile to try to develop the idea that this is what we're hoping for in the future. I mean, Rabbeinu Bechaya says there will be makos. There will be makos on the Umay Sa'ilam, that there will be a Kriyas Yamsuf. That, I mean, he says, you know how in the Torah gives different dates of how long Mitzrayim lasted for. Was it 210? Was it 400? Was it 430? And basically, Klal Yisrael didn't know how to reconcile all the dates until the day we left. And then they realized, okay, 210 in Mitzrayim, 400 from the Leida of Yitzchak, 430 from the Bris Ben Abbasarim. But at the time, you had, you know, Bnei Ephraim, they left 30 years early, they miscalculated. But Rabbi Mechai just points out, if you look in Sefer Daniel, three different dates are given. We don't even know what the years are. So he says, if when we knew precise numbers, 210, 400, 430, we still couldn't reconcile it until it happened, Alachas Kama Vakama, the three dates given in Daniel, will not be able to reconcile until the great day comes. But he literally learns that every single detail will replay itself. To the point I saw, like, one of the Rebbes asked, the Shomer Amunim asks, well, you know, by Makas Bechayrais, it says there will never be a scream like that. So that's, no, he says, because La'asad Lavai, it won't only be the Bechayrim, all the enemies. So to read the Haggadah like that this is not just ancient history, it's what we're aspiring for, what we're yearning for, changes the view on the Haggadah.
Right. Now in this Haggadah, there you have any favorite Vartlach? People always want to know, what's your favorite Vart?
My favorite
insight, something that people, or a revelation that maybe people don't know.
Okay, this is a gift from heaven. This is a gift from heaven. At the Haggadah begins with this famous Seder. You have Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Yeshua. They're in Bnei Brak. You have five Tanoim in Bnei Brak. It's one of the only accounts of Tanoim sitting at a Seder. And just, I always wondered, I mean, you have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you have Rabbi Akiva, you have Rabbi Yeshua. Where's the Nasi? Where's Ram Gamliel? Where'd he go? Well, he wasn't invited. You know, what's going on? So, I don't know, maybe he was out of town. He was with his own family. There is, by the way, a Tosefta that talks about Ram Gamliel Seder, and it says Ram Gamliel spent the whole night learning Hilchos Pesach, which is very different from what these Tanoim did. They were Mesaprim Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Right.
So where was he? Right. By the way, he's not mentioned in the whole Haggadah. mm-hmm. until the end.
Until the end.
Oh, Ram Gaon. And but when he comes back with a bang. Okay, so this was. If you look in the Yad of the Rambam has there a nusach of the Haggadah. He adds one word that revolutionizes the whole Haggadah. He says, we know there's also a Mishnah that we say, Amar Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Hare Ani Keben Shivim Shana. Everybody knows, you know, as if I'm 70 years old, but really he was 18. It was the day he was appointed as Nasi. The Rambam adds the word Lohem. Amar Lohem Rav Elazar ben Azariah, meaning, at that historic Seder of the five Tanoim,
that's where he said it.
He said to them, by the way, I feel like I'm 70. That means we know that was the day he was appointed a Nasi. But the day he was appointed a Nasi, Ram Gamliel was deposed. So that explains why he wasn't there. Obviously, he wasn't there. He was deposed. He probably wasn't comfortable sitting with the group of Chacham that deposed him. Mm-hmm. The Gemara says that the day Ram Gamliel was deposed, the Beis Medrash was nitois v'hasafsalim. He had many, either 400 benches, 700 benches. Why? Because Ram Gamliel had a policy called Talmud she'ein toichai kabare al yikanes. You had to be worthy to enter the Beis Medrash. I think it is very telling that the Haggadah begins on the day Ram Gamliel is deposed. Because what are we doing the night of the Seder? Night of the Seder, we're saying, let's open the doors, bring in all the kinderlach, the Tom, the Sheni Yadei Elishol, the Rasha, everybody in. Do you think if Ram Gamliel was standing at the door, they'd all be able to come in? There's not a chance they'd be let. He would have let, it would be Keneged Ben Echa Dibro Torah. Chacham Mahu Oimer.
Right.
So the whole nature of the Seder is, it doesn't matter who the child is, it's an open door policy. So the Haggadah has to begin. Amar Lohem Rav Elazar ben Azariah, and Ram Gamliel's not here. So he says, how does he get back in the door? I think the Haggadah parallels that story in the Gemara Brachos perfectly. Because at the end of the story, Ram Gamliel asks Rabbi Yeshua for Mechila. Right? The Gemara says it was precipitated because Ram Gamliel asked Rabbi Yeshua to stand, and Rabbi Yeshua was very uncomfortable, and the Chacham didn't like that Ram Gamliel was imposing his authority over Rabbi Yeshua. Ultimately, Ram Gamliel asks Rabbi Yeshua for Mechila. Rabbi Yeshua says no. Ram Gamliel says, do it in the honor of my Avoisai. Rabbeinu Nissim says, who is Ram Gamliel's forefathers? Hillel. Ah. So if we want to bring Ram Gamliel back into the Seder, we got to invoke Hillel. Zeichel Mikdosh ki Hillel. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We have to mention Hillel. Now, the Gemara says that there was a great dilemma. When we bring Ram Gamliel back, should we make Rav Elazar ben Azariah step down? We can't do that. Malin b'koidesh ve'in moiridin. Yeah? So the Gemara says, okay, we got to keep Rav Elazar. Should they split the duties? The Gemara came up with the following formula. 3 and 1. Ram Gamliel gets 3 weeks. Rav Elazar ben Azariah gets 1 week. So when we bring Ram Gamliel back, we say, Ram Gamliel, you're back. We give you 3 things. Ram Gamliel hoy oimer. Ko shalay oimer. Shloisha dvarim halalu. But the Haggadah mamish parallels that episode of Rav Elazar ben Yeshua. And I found a siyua in Rav Nachman of Breslov to this whole. He says, when they came to tell the Chachamim, you know, Higiyah Zman Kriya Shema, so the Likutei Maran says, Higiyah Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. Shachris stands for She'eni Yadei Elishol Chacham Rasha Tam. In other words, they were saying, the reason why we're having this Seder is to allow everybody in. We need the Shachris, we need everybody in. Once we've let everyone in, perhaps we could bring Ram Gamliel back in as well.
Wow.
But that's just an example of how the format of the Haggadah. And I think that's like a novel matana.
Yeah. Wow. What an explanation. And what a find from Likutei Maran. What else? What else do you have to share?
Yeah, so let's talk about also, you know, we know, you know, the Rekeach, Rabbi Elazar Gamarza, ascribes significance, let's say, to the number of words in Megillas Esther, or the number of words in each segment of Tefillah. So it's like, is there a significance, or do we even have a number count of the number of words in the Haggadah? I have a Sefer, it's a very rare Sefer, it's called Sefer Avas Torah, by Rav Pinchas Ish Horowitz, from, I believe, the 19th century. He says he did a count from the beginning of the Haggadah until the official end of Gal Yisrael, 1,820 words in the Haggadah. Say, okay, what are you going to do with that? He said he counted the number of times the Shem Havaya is in the Chumash, 1,820 times. Adkan. But it hit me, it's so clear why the number of words in Haggadah correspond perfectly to the number of times Shem Havaya is in the Megillah. You see,
by the way, according to the Gersa, it's Amar Lohem.
Yeah.
I don't know what the count would be. The count would be off.
Oh, saying good.
He's saying very good. Sorry. Okay.
We could be.
By the way,
off,
is it curious? Not to interrupt your train of thought. The text of the Haggadah as we know it across Klal Yisrael, is it pretty much uniform from community to community? Are you familiar from Ashkenazim to Sephardim to?
It's a very good question. And I don't want to say definitively because I'm not certain. I'm not sure.
But at least according to one gear, so it's 820 words, for sure.
It's 1,820 words.
1,800
I guess Nusach Ashkenaz. In other words, you know, the Nusach of Ashkenazim.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I'm sure each Kehillah, whatever their word count is, there's a Dvarim G'dayim Einim B'mikra.
Right.
But, so you know, Paroi, was Paroi a Mammon or was Paroi a Koifer? It's a big question.
Right.
Paroi had a very good Rebbe. His Rebbe was Yosef. And Paroi tells Yosef the dream. And Yosef says, Paroi, Elohim Yanesh Elohim Paroi. And when Yosef interprets the dream, Paroi said, you're right, good gazak, Yosef. Hanimso kaze ish asharuach Elohim boy. So it sounds like he became a mammon.
Right.
On the other hand, throughout the story of Yitzchus Mitzrayim, Paroi says, mi Hashem asher eshma b'koilai. So was he a mammon or was he not? So the Shlach HaKadosh says, Paroi was a mammon in Elohim. He was a koifer in the Shem Havaya. What does that mean? He believed God created the world, but he oilam kimin hagaynoeg. He set it in a system. He turned on the conveyor belt. He pressed start, and now the world operates. Hateva, elikim is hateva. He believed in nature, but he did not believe that Hashem was hoya hoyveviyeh mahave kol havayis. That Hashem could override the system. That Hashem is mechadesh b'chol yom tam in masa bereishis, and he constantly is changing and overriding, and every event that happens is the Yad Hashem at that moment. Paroi did not believe in that. So the purpose of the Makos was to show that there's a Yud Kei Vav Kei. So it comes out very beautiful and very compelling that the number of words in the Haggadah correspond to the Shem Havaya. That's the purpose of the Haggadah. The Tachlis of the Haggadah is to come to Hakara in the Shem Havaya.
I thought you were going to say that he believed in Elohim and Midas Hadin only.
Oh.
Not Shem Havaya to Midas Harachman.
Yeah.
That the Rebbe Shlomo was going to take out his...
It could be the concept of Din and Teva is connected, and the concept of Rachman and Shem Havaya is also connected. So it could be that as well, yeah.
Right, that he didn't believe that despite them falling to the Memtah Shari Tumah, that there's the Midas Harachman.
On the Memtah Shari Tumah, right before the Haggadah went to print, I give a little insight. This is inside Art Scroll?
Yeah.
Okay, I hope I could. Right before the Haggadah went to print, I got a hold of the Haggadah Reb Chaim Falaji. I'm a big
Talmud
of Reb Chaim Falaji. I even went to his kever in Turkey back in the good old days when you could still go to Turkey. He wrote a Haggadah Zechir L'Chaim. So I'm looking at the Halach Ma'anya. It says Pisgah Aleph. So I said, Pisgah Bey, I see Ma'ashtan, Pisgah Bey, Pisgah Gimel, Pisgah. I say, how many Pisgahs are there? Go'al Yisrael, Pisgah Nun. And then it stops. So and then I see that Reb Chaim Falaji says he wanted to break up the Haggadah into components to see how many segments there are. And he says, lo and behold, he discovered there are 50 segments in the Haggadah. And the reason is, based on Tikkuni Zohar, and also Reb Eliyahu HaKohen of Izmir, it says Yitzias Mitzrayim 50 times in the Chumash, because had we remained there a moment longer, we would have fallen into the Shar Nun, the point of no return. So Yitzias Mitzrayim was HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Moitzias from the 50 Sha'arim. Keneged Zeh, they enacted, they formatted the Haggadah with 50 segments. So to me, again, this all fits into what I was trying to accomplish with the Haggadah, that I want to see the Haggadah as one formatted document. How many words are there? How many segments are there? What's the flow? Why do some people come in at different intervals? So I put in the Haggadah in the very beginning, a list of all the various piskais and what they are. Like I named all the chapters of the Haggadah. Let's see if we could. And based on Reb Chaim Falaji. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here on page 131. The 50 piskais. Mm-hmm. However, if Art Scroll ever does a Reb Chaim Falaji Haggadah, okay, this is the inside Art Scroll, then it will say by each one what number it is. Uh-huh. But this is not the Reb Chaim Falaji Haggadah. So just in one section, it lists the 50 piskais.
It's interesting you mentioned the Memteh Shari Tumah, but Chazal also say that there will never be a dar like the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So on one hand, they had fallen to the lowest level of Tumah. On the other hand, there was something very unique about the Yotzei Mitzrayim, about that dar that will never be replicated. Mm-hmm. How does that dichotomy work?
Okay, that's a very important question. And this is really a question that should be focused on and addressed more. And there's an essay on this question in this Haggadah. I will point out, when we talk about the Memteh Shari Tumah, and this idea that if we were to fall into the Shar Nun, it's the point of no return.
Right.
I want to point out, it's so common, we always say the Shar Nun, the point of no return. Is there a Shar Nun? It's very, many maintain that indeed there is a Shar Nun. The Vilna Gaon says, Lai Haya V'Lai Nivra, there is no Shar Nun. It does not exist. The Gron Mishlei says on the Pasuk, Kol Pael Hashem L'manehu V'gam Rasha L'yoyim Ra. Kol, the Shar Nun of Kedusha, Pael Hashem L'manehu. V'gam, 49, Rasha. There are only 49 for the Rasha. There is no Shar Nun. The Leshem brings that there is an opinion in Kabbalah, there is a Shar Nun. And the Leshem says the Gra is definitively correct. There is no Shar Nun. So that's a very interesting. Mm-hmm. But there is, let's say, even according to the Leshem and the Gra, there's a Shar Memtes, the point of no return. And if I could just interrupt very briefly, I always wondered, how could you say there's a point of no return? I mean, isn't that antithetical? Don't
to
we always believe?
To the whole Yisrael of Yiddishkeit.
Ad Yoy Moisei. Ad Yoy Moisei. Ein Yosh Ba'olam. Hashem B'chol Yoy Mechak Alay. Hashem is always, even Acher, the Chazal say, Shuvu Vanum Shoivavim Chutz Mei Acher, but Kol Ma She'amar Lecha Balabayis Asei Chutz Mitzei. The Shlo says, whatever Ribbono Shel Olam tells you, you listen, unless he says, get out, you can't do tshuva, then you don't have to listen.
Right.
Anyone could do tshuva. I was thinking about this. What exactly is this point of no return? And, you know, the point of no return is a Kabbalistic concept. And I think I found the answer in the most basic source, the Rambam. You know, the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah writes about the development of Avodah Zarah. The Rambam says, you know, that Avram Avinu came along and he planted in the hearts of Klal Yisrael the Ikar of Emunah, and he gave it over to Yitzchak, and he gave it over to Yaakov. And then we went down to Mitzrayim, and the planting of Avraham began to wane. And had we remained a moment longer, the planting that Avraham planted in us would have been Ne'ekar Legamri. And to me, it sounds very similar to this idea of the point of no return, but it's giving a rationale. And I think it's as follows. There is no question that there is no point of no return. You could always do tshuva. You could always do tshuva. But here's the thing. Who are we? Who is Rabbi Yitzchak Kizagar? Who's Daniel Gladstein? We are B'nai Avraham. Why are we B'nai Avraham? Because there's something that Avraham planted into our spiritual DNA. However, had we remained in Mitzrayim a moment longer, you know who we would have been? We just would have been us. And we could not trace back our spiritual ancestry to Avraham Avinu. We would have been cut off from the Avos HaKadoshim. Not that we would have fallen into the abyss and we can never return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the connection to the bedrock of our past would have been completely severed. So Yitzias Mitzrayim then is a celebration, not, oh, Hashem took us out of the Shar Nun. What is the Shar Nun? Hashem rescued us so that we were able to recover our eternal connection to the Avos. Maybe that's why that you have the emphasis of higada talabincha. There's no other mitzvah that you have to give to your child. Do the mitzvah, shake the lulav, blow the shofar. But Yetzias Mitzrayim was a celebration that we're eternally connected. That's perhaps the meaning behind this point of no return. But you ask, you know, so how do we evaluate the level that Klal Yisrael were on when they left Mitzrayim? Were they on the brink or were they on the highest level?
Right.
The Leshem says that it's a mistake to say that the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim we were going to fall to the brink. How could that be? He says, once Hashem began to bring the Makos, like a year earlier, and we began to see the Hashkacha, that propelled us to great heights. Mm-hmm. If we were ever on the brink,
it was prior to the
before the Makos.
Uh-huh.
The night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, like you said before, we were on the highest level of anyone in history. Ready for this? I want everyone, all the audience, to fasten their seatbelts. Says the Baal HaLashem, you know what it means had we remained in Mitzrayim a moment longer? We would have been on the point of no return. Had we remained in Mitzrayim a moment longer, with such Giloy Shechina, we would have been propelled to the 50th level of Kedusha, and then there would be no Tachlis Habriya, and then we would have to call it a day. Wow. So not that we would fall to the point of no return, we would have been propelled Lamala to the of a madriga that Hashem wanted us to be on. So at first we were at the brink. Through the Makos, Hashem began to elevate us until the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We were at the brink of the summit of Kedusha. Had we remained there a moment longer, B'moira Gadol Zu Gilo Shechina, we would have been elevated to the greatest level, and that we couldn't have yet.
I would add that the amazing component of this Vart that you're saying is that they were able to reach the pinnacle of Kedusha still in Mitzrayim. They were still in the Ervas Haaretz.
Very good.
It was in Mitzrayim itself, which was the most immoral land in the world, where they fell to the lowest abyss. But also it was within that environment that they also rose to the highest level of Kedusha, which should provide tremendous chizuk to everyone now.
Beautiful.
That even within the immoral environment, a person could reach that level of holiness and purity.
Beautiful.
Sometimes people think, oh, I have to be extracted, extricate me from the Ervas Haaretz, and then I'll be able to reach the Kedusha. This part that you're saying is so potent and so powerful, because it's telling us that Adrab, Klal Yisrael reached that level even when they were there before they went out.
Beautiful.
Maridik.
Beautiful. Ah. Beautiful.
Mamashu, thank we have you. A Rischa Dairaisa.
Yeah, that could be better. That's what the Sifrei Chassidus say, Tchila L'mikrayi Kodesh, when you're embarking on a voyage of Kedusha, you know what you always have to remember? Zecher L'Yetzias Mitzrayim. Don't be down on yourself. Uh-huh. Because think about where they were and still what they were able to elevate themselves to.
Speaking of elevating, this Haggadah is pure spiritual bliss. It's an elevation.
Thank you.
I know how much Aliyah I felt going through the beautiful Shtiklach, and those who didn't go through it last year, and even those who did should make sure to do it again. Get a hold of the Haggadah. I think it will enhance their Seder quite significantly.
Thank you.
And it's never too late to wish you a Mazel Tov on the
release. Thank you very much.
It's a year old, but it's as fresh and it's as new as ever, and there's so much in here, and we appreciate you sharing from your wellsprings of yedias and your passion and your messages that resonate with people so beautifully. So Chel Chel Eraisa, keep doing what you're doing with
your
Abbas HaSatayra and putting out such really beautiful Svarim, such a Kiddush Em Shemayim.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for being here.
My pleasure, and it's a great honor to see you.
Thank you.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.